We'll come to order. It's February 18, 2005, and actually, it's a special committee on Ways and Means. Today, Representative Gruenberg, Representative Seaton, and myself, Representative Wyrock, are here, and we will have some other members join us shortly. What we were going to take up on the calendar today is House Bill 52 first. That's a bill by Representative Gruenberg on a long-range fiscal plan, and then we weren't going to take any action on that bill, but what we were going to do, also present for the record is Representative Samuels. We weren't going to take any action on House Bill 52 today, but I wanted Representative Gruenberg the opportunity to introduce this bill again. It was heard last year in Ways and Means, and then next Friday we'll take any amendments in committee and public participation on that. And then we're going to take up House Bill 143, which is a bill that would address the shortfalls in state funding through the use of constitutional budget reserve and the permanent fund earnings reserve. And we have the various entities from the state government to talk about how this bill would work. The long-term sort of schedule for this committee is to deal with ways to finance state government and determine the means to pay for state programs that everybody wants. Yesterday, and there was all kinds of people asking for all kinds of money related to education, which we all want to do, but we have to have a way to fund it in the long term, because it's not going to get any, the request for education funds isn't going to get any lower. So what this bill does is use earnings reserve funds and CBR funds, and that's going to be contrasted with a bill that I've been working on that's still been in drafting stage for 4 weeks on taxes, so that we can have really three philosophic ways to address budget shortfalls. But let's start with Representative Gruenberg and on your bill, Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Once again, Speaker Harris and I, and it's really a co-bill, Harris-Gruenberg bill, have introduced this legislation, which unfortunately ran out of time last year. It was in its previous incarnation, House Bill 493. And House Bill 52 is the Ways and Means Committee substitute for House Bill 493, with just a couple of non-relevant grammatical changes that I can go over if anybody wishes, publicly or privately. The bill's very simple. The guts of it are on page 2, but the first section contains legislative findings indicating the areas of legislative responsibility, including public health and welfare, public education, development of natural resources and wise development. Other responsibilities include public safety, public facilities, and environmental protection. In order to carry out these responsibilities, we must budget a reasonable level of expenditures to finance the operations of state government. There is often a significant disparity between revenue sources that are currently being used and the expenditures necessary to maintain a reasonable level of state services. The revenue sources go up and down, and we need some stability here. For several years, the legislature has addressed the disparity by drawing against the balance of the budget reserve fund. The budget reserve fund has been declining to a level that requires the immediate development of a sound fiscal plan. And there's no simple solution, but a long-term comprehensive fiscal plan will encourage the discipline necessary to ensure that the budget remains balanced and properly planned, and the plan will also stabilize the state's economy. Now, at the bottom of page 2, as I say, are the guts of the bill, and this is going to be a permanent statute entitled Long-Range Fiscal Plan. I was surprised to learn last year that there was no statute requiring the state to adopt and maintain a stable long-term fiscal plan, and this requires the legislature to adopt and annually revise a comprehensive long-range fiscal plan to balance state revenue and expenditures for the current year and for succeeding years, a five-year plan. And it must set out projected revenue available, and anticipated expenditures for the operation of state government for each fiscal year. And for each of the fiscal years that projected expenditures exceed projected available revenue, the plan must include specific proposal to balance the budget. And the plan must include, be comprehensive, and include ways to encourage real economic growth and stability, a high quality of life, the development of natural resources, education for the children, and to maintain public health and safety, procedures to ensure that state government provides services as efficiently as practicable, yet reduces state expenditures where possible. We must protect the principle of the permanent fund in accord with the constitutional mandate and use the earnings of the fund to provide inflation proofing, maintain a strong dividend program, and retain the legislature's legal flexibility to determine the appropriate use of the remaining earnings of the fund. The legislature must also examine and plan for ways to raise the necessary revenue for the operation of state government while maintaining a stable tax environment, and the plan must contain provisions to maintain the integrity of the budget reserve fund established under the Constitution to ensure that it remains available to provide funding for emergencies and to maintain a prudent minimum balance in the fund. I think it's safe to say that virtually every group that has looked into the situation, every public and private group, Mr. Chair, has said that we need a long-term fiscal plan to provide for the growth and development and proper maintenance of state government in a way that will provide comfortably for the state's residents and for the children of the state and their children. And this just directs the legislature to do it. Obviously, we can't bind the legislature, but we can certainly provide something in law that is a mandate and a policy for the state, and this is what this does. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We've been joined by Representative Roachberg and Representative Wilson. We're on House Bill 52, and we weren't going to take action on this. We just wanted to get it introduced, and then we'll deliberate on it, take testimony next week. Any questions for the sponsor? No, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you consider all the revenue sources of the state, including, as this entails, the earnings of the permanent fund and earnings of other funds in the state, have we had a time in which this would have been applicable, in which the revenues that were generated by the state, including the earnings of the permanent fund, would not have equaled the expenditures that the state incurred?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
But I'm not totally sure, but I don't believe so.
Any other? Yeah, Representative Wilson.
So the bill actually, it protects the permanent fund dividend, the CBR. We use the ERA or taxes, and we reduce that. I mean, that's in a nutshell kind of what this does.
It directs the legislature to consider all of those sources. What the individual legislatures will do will be up to them and their wisdom. But it directs them to create a process and do it. I want to keep the flexibility to do the right thing, but I want them to do it.
Any further questions, Representative Grunberg? All right, we're going to take this up next Friday, Representative Grunberg, and I have some amendments I'm going to bring up next week, and I'll give those to you in advance.
I would appreciate it, any suggestions anybody has. I didn't realize that you weren't going to take any testimony.
If there's anyone who wants to testify.
Well, yeah, I think there may be somebody in the audience. We contacted a few people because we thought we had a certain amount of time, and if we can take them now, that will...
I'm happy to take. Mr. Ritchie, did you want to testify on this bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sure. I didn't mean to short shrift anyone. No. I apologize.
Kevin Ritchie with the Alaska Municipality. I'll just be very brief because we'll probably have other opportunities to discuss this. But, you know, clearly the Municipal League and the members all support the concept of a long-range fiscal plan. And, in fact, many municipalities have a plan that tries to look out 5 years to balance, you know, look at what they need to purchase in 5 years and what revenues they think are going to be available to purchase them. So we're obviously very supportive of the concept. And there's obviously lots of holes in any plan. And there's an old saying I guess I'd leave you with, is that the only thing more dangerous than planning is not planning. And so you're a bit ahead, you know, no matter what the effort is on a long-range fiscal plan. So,
did you say, Mr. Ritchie, there's other states that have what they
call? I was thinking other municipalities.
Oh, municipalities in the state.
And other, I couldn't speak to other states, but certainly municipalities. And Juneau, the one I'm most familiar with, tries to look ahead 5 years.
Does anyone ever, in any ordinance or statute, ever call anything a long-range fiscal plan?
No specific terms. I'm not really prepared to answer that, but I can just tell you that when I was with the City and Borough of Juneau, we had a 5-year fiscal plan.
Was it called that in ordinance? In ordinance?
That I don't know. Actually, I think not. I think it was not called that in ordinance.
Representative Roper.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't recall the exact statute right now, but in my research on balancing the budget, I think there is already a statutory requirement for a long-range projection in our current statute. So you might.
Yeah, I was going to look at that.
Look
at that too.
I couldn't find it if there were.
There is.
All right. Representative Wilson.
I really don't have a question, but I have a comment, and the comment is that I've received emails and also letters from many. Different municipalities across the state and organizations begging us to do something like this. So I think that it's probably long overdue, and I think we really need to look at this very closely.
I get them asking for the money and not the policy. Representative Roper.
Mr. Chairman, I think we need to adopt the long-range fiscal plan, not a bill that talks about it. And I'm worried that this would even deflect from the urgency to adopt the plan. So.
That's a risk. You say, I suppose what it is, fluff as opposed to the substance, maybe.
We've seen this before in this committee.
Yeah. Let's see. Thank you, Mr. Ritchie.
Thank you.
Mr. Owen, Chad Owen.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
My name's Tad Owens. I'm the Executive Director of the Resource Development Council, and I'll keep my comments very brief. Wanted to just applaud the committee again for taking up this very important issue. As you all know, our members have been very concerned about the state's structural fiscal imbalance. It's been one of, if not our top legislative priority over the past decade. And we've partnered with a host of other business, community, and education organizations over the past couple of years to encourage the legislature to take a real hard look at this. And while our board has not taken a formal position on this particular bill, we're anxious to work with the legislature on any and all ideas to move the state closer to a long-range fiscal plan, something that brings the state's revenues and expenditures closer to balance over time. So just from RDC's perspective, we really appreciate the work that all the members of this committee have done, not just this year but in the past. We stand ready and willing and able to assist you with your work, and hopefully we have a little window of opportunity this session with a budget surplus that maybe that gives the legislature an opportunity to take some of the tough decisions that really need to come in order to put the state on track with fiscal responsibility over the long haul. So I'd be happy to answer any questions about RDC's position on this general issue, and again, just applaud the committee for its work.
Mr. Owens, your position mirrors that of the Chamber and AARP and many other entities. So thank you. Representative Seaton?
Yes. Thank you, Tad. Is your position that the largest source or one of the largest sources of state revenue should not be counted in the revenue of the state? In other words, we have the earnings of the permanent fund standing at $30 billion now. And are you taking any position on whether those earnings on that bank account should be counted as state revenue or not counted as state revenue?
Actually, Representative, it's the value of the permanent funds, $30 billion, not the earnings right now. Right? Is
that I'm talking about the earnings.
You're talking about the earnings.
We have an account that is earning at approximately 8% a year, and that is real money that is earned on a state account. And if we count those earnings to the state as revenue, then we don't have a budget hole. If we decide that we want to not count the earnings on our largest asset, then we have a budget hole. And I'm trying to figure out whether people are coming forward and saying we should sequester and not count as revenue, you know, the largest chunk of revenue to the state, and then balance our budget or do a fiscal plan based on not involving the revenue at all. And this bill includes the earnings. And so that's what I'm trying to find out.
Mr. Owen.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, our position is that certainly the state is not in a situation where we don't have revenue or revenue options to cover our expenditures. It's really an allocation issue. And we have said that, you know, three general steps should be taken to address the long-term fiscal imbalance that the state faces, and that is, first, budget discipline; second, uses of the permanent fund earnings for something other than dividends alone. And we have endorsed the constitutional amendment for POMV as a management tool, and our board is also supportive of a statutory POMV as a management tool for the permanent fund earnings. And then lastly, the institution of a broad-based tax, if necessary. We think those three steps provide the legislature, and obviously there's a lot of iterations and options within those three broad recommendations, but we believe those three steps are more than enough for the legislature to close the state's fiscal gap over time.
All right. Representative Roakberg.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Owen, I want to thank the Resource Development Council and yourself in particular for coming over the years to many of these committee meetings and testifying and making the public aware of the position of your memberships and being supportive of issues that sometimes are not entirely popular. And I want to thank you for that, and thanks for coming today. I would have one question from Mr. Owen, Mr. Chairman, and that is to say that would you prefer to see an actual long-range fiscal plan rather than a passage of a bill like this?
Representative Roakberg, through the chair, that's an interesting question. It's something that our board has actually wrestled with recently. We have tried to reevaluate our strategy every year in order to be helpful and productive participants in this discussion. And I think our board really is wrestling right now with whether or not some of the rhetoric that we and others have used in the past in terms of long-range and comprehensive fiscal plan versus making some incremental improvements when possible to the status quo. And so I guess I don't have a good answer to your question right now, but we certainly are willing to sit down with the legislature and work on any idea that's going to move the state forward. And we haven't had a chance to take up the particulars of HB 52, and I understand your question being one of planning versus action, and we certainly appreciate you know, both concepts, and I guess we haven't really fallen out on one or the other at this point.
Thank you, Representative Roakberg. Representative Gruenberg.
Yes, I would like to thank you also, Mr. Owens, and Mr. Ritchie, too, for coming forward. But I'd like it very clear that this is not an alternative to an actual fiscal plan. I look at this and an actual fiscal plan as both being necessary. This is not an either-or. And I would ask you, Mr. Owens, would the RDC support the implementation of both?
Representative Gruenberg, through the chair, I think you're right, and I didn't mean to characterize it as an either-or. I think our board is interested in seeing the state move forward on this important issue, and we certainly will take up both. And I think if the legislature were to do both, that would be the best of all worlds from our standpoint.
Well, it's this committee's intention to take up some serious issues related to trying to solve the problem starting today, Mr. Owens. Any further questions, Mr. Owens? Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Is anyone else online who wanted to testify on House Bill 52 or in the audience? Representative Grunberg?
Just in light of your last sentence. Thank you.
You bet. Before we kill your bill, I mean move.
You said before we kill your. I take that back.
Mr. Carpenter, can you come forward? We're going to take up now House Bill 143, and this bill is intended is a companion to a bill that was introduced in the Senate by Senator Wilken. And essentially what the bill does is if there's a budget shortfall, it establishes the policy of the legislature to fill that shortfall using the earnings from the permanent fund and the constitutional budget reserve fund. And I wanted to less approach this issue through this bill as a matter of sales and more as a matter of education for the public to understand what where we are now in terms of our fiscal deficit, in terms of how we deal with the deficit in a long-term structural basis, and two, to sensitize the public that there are two significant pools of money that the state has access to that have not been used to fill a gap when it occurs. So, Mr. Carpenter, I have appreciated your slides that you have prepared for the Senate version of this, and what I asked Mr. Carpenter to do is tailor his presentation to what House Bill 143 says, because there are some language differences between this bill and the bill that was introduced in the sentence, in the Senate. So, Mr. Carpenter, if you could identify yourself for the record, there's a PowerPoint presentation on the overhead for the camera to see, and go through this and establish what this bill would do structurally in the state, if you can.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Rob Carpenter with the Legislative Finance Division. If I could just clarify, I didn't actually prepare these slides. I provided technical details, the slides to be prepared, in other words.
You would have the technical basis for the information.
Yes. Then. Yeah. Your last statement saying that HB 143 is, I would say it's virtually does the same thing as Senate Bill 88. It's just reworded.
It's reworded, and it also deals with a tax issue that bill does not.
That's correct. Yeah. Okay. Starting out, this first slide basically says what you've already said, Mr. Chairman. That the shortfall in general fund revenue or general fund appropriations will be filled 50-50 with the CBR and the ERA. Earnings.
Now, just earnings reserve.
Yes, earnings of the permanent fund. Okay. This slide shows where the problem really is. As you can see, the entire state budget's made up of many slices. The problem resides in general fund revenue and appropriations, which is roughly a third of the budget there, I guess. Usually when people talk about the budget, they don't include the permanent fund section, but it is a major component of appropriations there for dividends and inflation proofing. So that slice is included. The other slices being federal funds, trust funds, which include the Alyeska settlement funds, things like that. Statutorily restricted funds, which are university receipts.
Mr. Carpenter, on this slide, though, it shows permanent fund money being used for, or permanent fund earnings reserve money currently being used in the operating and capital budgets.
Yes.
Now, just so the public understands what that means again, could you reiterate, we are presently using funds for the permanent fund. In what capacity are we using them and how much?
The majority of the capacity, Mr. Chairman, is for appropriations for the dividend itself. Mm-hmm. And that's roughly $1 billion a year. Mm-hmm. We also appropriate another considerable chunk for inflation proofing the principal of the permanent fund.
Right. But also, what people have asked me, we just leave it alone, or have indicated to me to leave the permanent fund alone. People, if everybody looks at their permanent fund dividend check stub, there are other uses of the permanent fund right now used for state government. Isn't that correct?
Yes, sir.
And are those uses included in this slice of the pie shown on this slide?
That's correct.
Okay. So generally, what are some of the uses that we already use for the permanent fund earning reserve right now?
There is a chunk for the Hold Harmless within the Department of Health and Social Services, which is a program. I'm not entirely familiar with it, but if you qualify for TANF funding, you get your dividend garnished, if you will.
There's others who can testify on that, too, if you're not familiar with it.
There's a small amount used in the Department of Revenue for oil and gas and DNR for supplementing their budgets for the work they do with the royalty deposits to the permanent fund. Small amounts of money in reality. The largest chunks being the dividend and the inflation proof and appropriation.
Okay, just for an example again for the public's benefit, once we make those sorts of hold harmless appropriations for department revenue and other smaller appropriations, plus the inflation proofing, plus the permanent fund dividend, roughly how much is left in the earnings reserve account that could also be used that is not used?
Projected to end 05 would be about $2.1 billion.
Okay, $2.1 billion is left, and that could be used by a majority vote of the legislature right now, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Otherwise, does the $2.1 billion that is left in the earnings reserve account gain interest? Is it invested?
It is, Mr. Chairman, it is invested almost immediately, I would say, in the asset allocation of the permanent fund.
Okay. And also, $2.1 billion in the earnings reserve account, how does that compare to what the operating budget for the state of Alaska is annually?
It's almost in the same amount, Mr. Chairman. The operating budget for 05, not including supplemental, was about $2.3 billion.
Okay. And then the capital budget, how much is the capital budget?
I'm sorry, that was the entire budget.
The entire budget is $2.3 billion, so both operating and capital.
That's correct.
And so the amount in the earnings reserve, which the legislature can appropriate, equals the amount generally for the capital and operating budgets for this last year?
At this time, Mr. Chairman. There was a two-year time period where we were losing considerable amount of money, and there would not have been a balance significant to do what you're saying.
And if the committee has any questions as we go through these presentations, please interject. Representative Roper.
Just as a point, in October of 2002, the earnings reserve had a negative balance, and had the market not returned, there would not have been sufficient money to pay the dividend. Just as a point of information.
We were lucky again. Representative Wilson.
If I remember, that happened two different times.
Well, the whole quarter, the third quarter of 2002. Right?
I would like to have a detailed paper, showing exactly what you just said, so that we know exactly how much is in the ERA and how much it's currently being used and what for. Okay. You could do that for now. That'd be great.
Representative Wilson. I have a slide later on that the Permanent Fund Corporation provides. They provide monthly financials, and it details the amounts in the principal and the ERA quite extensively.
Okay.
And I could provide budget reports showing expenditures.
And at some point, we may go into that in more detail, but yesterday's presentation at the Joint Finance and House Finance Committee was helpful in terms of just getting that sort of historic overview and future prognosis of earnings, too. Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Kerr.
This slide shows kind of, two problems we're facing with our general fund revenue. It goes back to FY90. The maroon, I guess, color is the general fund revenue, and the bars would be the general fund appropriations. What's striking is the volatility, peaks and valleys of the general fund revenue, and in the latter years, the declining projections of general fund revenue. So I would say those are your two primary issues.
The difference between the white bars and the maroon background is the gap between income and expenditures. Is that right?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Now, if this bill were law, the mechanism for having the maroon line meet the top of the white bar would be to split the difference between the constitutional budget reserve and the earnings reserve account?
Yes.
Okay. Now, that darker blue field on the right-hand side, it is significant assumptions based on gas pipeline, Anwar development, any other resource development. Is that what's included in this chart?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. That's exactly right.
Chairman. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Does the maroon background, that the general fund baseline, that's baseline, can you define what that baseline means?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, that is the current revenue we are receiving now, given to fields that are developed from oil and taxes that are in place and projected by the Department of Revenue forward.
And follow up.
Yeah, sure.
And does that include the earnings of the permanent fund?
No, sir. That is merely what we now count as general fund revenue.
Thank you.
The just also for interpretation purposes, you've got a green diamonds in that center bar. That's the current year?
That is FY05, Mr. Chairman. Which is showing a considerable surplus.
So this is 06.
There was some issues with, if you look at the far right, Representative
Roper. 06, is that what you're?
Pardon me?
That's 06.
It's supposed to be 05. If you look at the far right, FY20 is skewed. It was an Excel issue, but.
Oh, that
technology.
Oh, I see. So the bar, the diamonds should be FY05. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Correct.
I see.
Okay. Is that? Is every other fiscal year then the same way?
So everything moved to the left
on the left one, is that right?
So if you start at FY90, the bar in front of FY90 is FY90. So the bar in front of FY05.
Your glasses are fine, Representative Brooklyn.
All right.
Representative Grunberg and then Representative Samuels.
Yes. How did you arrive at a 2% increase?
Very good question, Representative Grunberg. It's an assumption I had to make. It's by no means relating to any kind of actuality.
Is there any historic basis for 2% in the future? There really doesn't look to be a pattern of
the
increases.
Mr. Chairman, I had to pick an assumption, basically.
Sure,
I could have chosen the idea was kind of just inflation. You could say 2.6%, 2%. I did build in for 06 and 07. I took a baseline figure of 05, which is about 2.3 billion, added in the PERS and TERS unfunded liability for the following 2 years, and just kind of threw it at 2%.
On that point?
Mr. Chairman, I just might remind you that the projections for future expenditures are, some of that work has been done by this committee last year, Representative Hawker. So I think we were leading the pack and trying to bring some rational future projections to an issue where the Department of Revenue was using a flatline future on all of their website and their various other planning documents, where we worked at that, and that's relatively consistent. I think that's something we need to pursue again. To build on that work.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carpenter, I'd like you to divide your attention into two parts on the chart. The one to the left of the green diamond, the one to the right of the green diamond. The one to the left are actual figures, the one to the right are projections, right?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, that's correct.
And so we don't see, in fact, that the budget has gone up at a 2% rate. We've seen it affected, and that has been affected by what the legislature itself has done. Isn't that correct?
You could say that, yes, sir.
I'm not entirely, because we're governed by how much money we have and what our needs are. But my point is that we are, to some extent, the masters of our own fate. That's all I wanted to do.
Representative Samuels, then Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if this question is for you or if you want to take it up later, but what's the thinking of the bill if the CBR can't cover its half? Can you go to the earnings reserve, or are you implying that you have to go to a new tax?
Well, structurally, that doesn't address that if it can't be covered by half, because and we can get into that on what that would do.
Okay, and the second question may be appropriate for later also is before the enactment of a new tax also implies that something like a tobacco tax that wouldn't be considered a revenue measure. Can you even discuss those if you don't need the money? So it's just a couple of questions in the language of the bill itself.
Right, yeah, what's a tax?
That's right. That's part of the bill. We'll have to keep those in our quiver.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is, before the enactment of any new tax, and my question is, does that mean a new tax that we don't have now, or adding on to a tax that we currently have?
Again, that keep that as part of the bill deliberation, too.
Okay. And then I'd like to make one comment, follow up from a question that was raised already. The fact that it shows that we went down actually many years in the past and then started up again and then went down. And so the projection of the future has the 2% increase in it. The fact that we have not kept up with inflation in most of the budgets across the state, we are going to, if we want to stay even with the status quo, we are going to have to increase that because we have not done we have not kept up with inflation, so we're going to have to catch up with that sometime. So I just want to make that comment.
On that point, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, Representative Roper.
The budget went down because we didn't have the money.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
It's extreme amounts of shortfalls, up to $1 billion a year. So the legislature was reacting to their cash flow.
Amazing. True. Representative Seaton.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I'd just also like to say that it's not only just that we didn't have the money, but I think that there were conscious choices, policy decisions of whether we should raise the budget of the state or whether it should be streamlining government and lessening government. I think that's a policy issue that is reflected in these past lines, and what we're saying on the future line is we are not going to have that as a policy decision of the legislature. The legislature will have a policy decision that every year the budget is going to grow under the scenario that we have in this graph. Now, we have control of that, and you know that's a policy decision. It depends on who's elected to be here to grow the government or constrain the government. So I think there's two things at play. It's, you know, that and that's one of the things we have at play right now. We have some extra money. We'll call it extra money. Is the legislature going to say, oh, there's money there from the windfall, we're going to spend it all? Or are we going to make the decision that we're not going to spend it all? So I think that we need to consider this graph also in a policy-driven way and what the legislature wants to do, instead of saying that these lines that are based basically on the constitutional amendment that we proposed last year for constraining government to no more than a 2% growth, is going to rule our lives and our decisions in the future. And so I just want to keep that in mind.
Other questions? Any more on this graph, Mr. Carpenter?
No, sir.
All right. Go ahead.
This is a fairly interesting graph. This shows the proposed general fund budget for FY06. It's assuming the governor's budget plus the PERS unfunded liability, which currently is proposed as a supplemental, but I just threw it in there just because it's for 06 costs. And then considering what average price of oil we'd have to reach to break even and or where the fiscal gap would be at various prices or a surplus. So at roughly $2.6 billion, you're breaking even at around 42. Any higher than that, you're in a surplus. Any lower than that, you're in a fiscal gap situation.
So this is a snapshot of this year?
The upcoming years, yes, sir.
Because it's just one, well, there's no, not upcoming years?
Just for FY06.
Yeah, just for this year?
Yes.
Yeah. Fiscal year, upcoming fiscal year.
Correct.
Right. Representative Gruenberg?
Just for those of us who are just following along slightly behind, the key for the bottom should be labeled price per barrel of oil.
Yes, sir, Representative Gruenberg.
Yeah, Representative Wilson.
That is the, for clarity, that is the average price throughout an entire fiscal year.
I see. Representative Wilson.
So, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So what this is saying, that in order for us to not have a budget deficit, and right where we're going to have, we're breaking even, would be $42 a barrel for a full year.
That's correct. For FY06.
Yes.
And that's assuming the governor's budget plus, you know, another $117 million.
And follow
up. Yeah, sure.
What was the price of oil yesterday?
I don't know yesterday. I mean, we're around 41, 42, something like that.
42, so already. Yeah.
It's up today.
Yeah, 43. Okay. Why does this, on this blue field, where I think what you mean the apex of your fiscal gap, red, and then meet the lower corner of your surplus, or your angle of your surplus, right? I mean, that's where they meet if you brought them together.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Then this blue field goes down. Why, if it's a single year, why does the blue show a diminishing towards the left? Why is it good?
Mr. Chairman, the idea is that if we were to average $25 a barrel for the year,
we wouldn't have, even spend it.
Right? Yeah, we'd have $1.6 billion or so, whatever the graph says there, which would be roughly $1 billion less than our expenditures. So the fiscal gap being at that point, if you followed the band together, you're at $2.6 billion.
I see. I got you. Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What is it projected statistically? What is the projected price of oil to be, statistically projected to be for FY06? I mean, on a curve or whatever.
The Department of Revenue establishes their revenue projections, which it's roughly $32 or $35 a barrel for the year. Let me look.
Well, I'm not expressing, through the chair, I'm very poorly expressing my question, sir. I'd like to know a range, that they would say the chances are X percent it'll be this price, the chances are somewhat less that it'd be on either side of that. Have we ever seen a chart or anything that could give us that?
Through the chairman, Representative Gruenberg, I have never seen that. Certainly is a worthwhile question. So a standard deviation, high or low around the average or something. I have never seen anything like that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gruenberg, there are sensitivity charts that are available. I think Mr. Teal or even the Department of Revenue can provide you those if you ask, perhaps.
Thank you. Yeah, I'd like to see that. I don't know if other members of the committee are interested.
Through Chair Representative Gruenberg, are you interested in the volatility of the oil prices and how?
Well, I mean, this would have to be built into the chart statistically. What are the statistical assumptions in figuring what the probabilities are that we're going to have that average price?
Oh no! Since this is what do that.
I'm sorry.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. They don't do the sensitivity in that regard. It's just the the correlation between the budget and the price of oil?
No, no. No, I'm not talking about, nothing to do with the budget.
Then they don't do that.
Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and I would defer to the Department of Revenue's oil people for something.
We will look into that. My sleuths are already thinking about how to get it. Thank you.
Representative Seaton?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that information has been presented before when we were talking about the percentage of time and the accuracy of oil projections by not only the state but by the other entities that project oil prices, and we considered that at Ways and Means, I think if you remember earlier on, and we were asking, I was specifically asking if some of the people, the analysts that project those oil prices are consistently on one side or the other, and you know, basically those were adjusted for.
We should have a meeting on historic chart review that we've had. We're good at charts.
These guys have better memories than I do, I figure.
Anything else on this slide? Any committee questions? Just to thread the line here, there's a problem that things can change quickly, and they have. Now, go ahead on this slide, Mr. Carpenter.
This slide basically reiterates what the previous slide showed, in that we've drawn on the CBR 8 out of 12 years, approximately $5.5 billion to balance the budget. Those valleys you saw were filled by the CBR.
The total amount that has been drawn in those 8 years has been $5.5 billion. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And is it true, looking at your last bullet point in this, is it in those 8 out of the 12 years that, well, in the, 4 years, then $5.6 billion was deposited back into it? Or that's independent of the legislature, because that's oil settlement money, correct? So that's independent of any of these appropriations out of the CBR.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. And the $5.5 billion, number seems a billion off to me, but I'm not sure why. Uh-huh. Seems like the liability of the CBR is right around $6.5 million.
These deposits into the CBR, over what period of time is that? Since 1990, since it was established?
Yes, sir. The next slide actually shows the balance of the CBR and the draws and the years they were incurred. The maroon being the continuing balance. The blue being the actual draw to balance the budget, and the green line being sort of an average draw. Big year being FY99 when we borrowed over $1 billion.
I see. Any questions on this slide? Well, it's a pretty steady level draw. Line, the green line, average draw. Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, it is an average, so the price is stable, or the value would be stable versus a rolling average where it would.
Right. Move, you know. Representative Groomberg.
Just for the record, Mr. Carpenter, the green quote average draw. That is an arithmetic mean draw rather than a median draw.
That's correct.
What would the median?
I don't have the answer to that at this time, Mr. Groomberg.
Okay, Mr. Kerber.
This slide pretty much depicts what could be considered a fiscal gully, if you will. The light blue showing the baseline general fund revenue on decline, the line above showing the general fund budget increasing, and the areas farther out being resource development. projected currently anyway, with gas line and new oil by the Department of Revenue. Problem years from 06 to 2013. This is basically has the same assumptions as previously noted, the 2% growth and on the budget.
Representative Wilson.
So what this is showing is that it's not going to be, unless we do something and do something soon, it's sure not going to be very fun to be a legislator in the next few years. It's going to be a lot harder.
Try an 89 and an 01 too, in those years.
What happened though?
It's when we were like drawing down $1 billion to $800 million a year from the CBR because the price of oil had plummeted.
Representative Seaton. Yes, I guess I'm just trying to figure it. So we're building in the 2% increase in the budget, and what is the base, what's the price of oil that calculates the general fund revenues here?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, these are projections provided by the Department of Revenue. Their long-term price of oil is $22 a barrel. The 06, they usually have a three-year horizon where they give a kind of a think the price is going to be, and then they just go to a mean price, a five-year average, or I believe, or maybe it's 10-year average.
It's a little higher now.
So, this unfilled fiscal gap based on 22 or 28 or something. So if we're at 43, that means that's all filled. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, that production is also an issue in that it's in decline. So price would have to probably increase higher, plus to go with the growth in the budget. So I would say the average price to fill the budget is growing. Needed to fill the budget.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's fine. I just want to make sure that we have the scenarios when we consider these charts as, you know, so that we know what the underlying assumptions are to give us this gap, because if we don't know what those underlying assumptions are for each one of these charts, we're then making projections based on not knowing what those are.
Right. So. That's right. The 2% was your assumption, but the other assumption, or the 22, comes from revenue. This gas pipeline greenfield, that's based on?
Also provided by OMB, Department of Revenue.
Okay. All right.
So your question arises, how are you going to deal with your fiscal gully? Reduce state spending? An income tax, corporate income tax, some other form of revenue, a sales tax, is the way we do it now with the CBR, which is right around $2.1 billion remaining, or in the center, the earnings of the permanent fund, at currently at $2.1 billion also remaining, which is all things you guys are considering right now.
This chart, though, like, for example, can you go back to that chart or up to that chart? Sales tax lower left, that's not a, that assumes a state, that assumes an enactment of a state sales tax, correct?
Yes, Mr.
And then the corporate tax on the left middle, that's existing corporate tax or future potential corporate tax?
Potential,
Mr. Chairman. Same with income upper right. Other revenues, those all are in existence, correct? Those taxes.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman.
And then the CBR, that's in existence. Representative Roper.
Mr. Chairman, I am concerned about where the source of these corporate tax, sales tax, income tax figures are from, because they're not quite consistent with some of the past studies of this committee. It says here in the legend, the permanent fund financial projections, or Scarborough, can you tell us where these dollar figures were obtained from?
Not from the permanent fund financial projections. The permanent fund numbers are provided by that. I believe they just assumed at 1% you get X dollars. I'm not entirely sure, but I believe that's correct.
Mr. Chairman, they appear to be the high ranges of some ranges that even the Department of Revenue has forecasted in the past for planning purposes.
Right. I don't know. And what we'll have to revisit some of that information, because a lot of that information was developed through the committee in the past, mm-hmm. through this committee in the past.
I believe these were merely provided as examples in general ranges of kind of revenue you could produce.
Okay. And also, I think that in the spirit of this chart, the intent here in this chart is that there's ways to fill the gap or the margin between revenues and expenses. These are pots of money to either we have or can consider, correct? The figures may be skewed, but at least these are the qualitative aspects. Representative Roper.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's exactly the point here, because these are max side figures, income tax, corporate tax, sales taxes. I mean, the high side here shows $1 billion.
Right.
So, in other words, we could, the legislature, as a matter of policy, could choose to implement the maximum amount of taxation as a burden to the public, and we'd still only come up with something around $1 billion. Mm-hmm. And our general fund revenue is 2.3 going to 2.6 overnight. Something that people need to be aware of. Even if we taxed ourselves to death, we still couldn't pay our bills. I mean, the question they'll ask is, can we afford ourselves?
Your point is there's a structural problem with the way we run business.
Exactly. I mean, that's the. Even if we were to do these things, we still couldn't balance the budget under other conditions depending on our natural resource revenue.
And so just to take your thought further, we would either have to have some sort of serious other revenue source.
Or cut the budget.
Or we would have to fundamentally change our system of government that we have now.
That is correct.
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the assumptions that every projection I've ever seen has for Alaska is that the production of oil is going to go down through the North Slope, that sort of thing. I've never seen any similar analysis for the Middle East. Is it just so large that it's not going to, for our purposes, decrease at all? Do you know?
Mr. Chairman, I can't entirely speak
no
to that.
No foundation but. Objection. But.
Really?
I love it. He objects, he rules.
I don't know, Mr. Carpenter, if you can opine on the question.
Yeah, I really don't have anything to say.
That's okay. I just thought you're in the hot seat. You're fair game. Sure. Thank you very much. Please, nothing personal.
Okay. Representative Wilson.
Looking at all this, we also have to be very careful, because we have to realize that if we did some of these things, it would be taking $1 billion out of our economy, and what would happen? So we really have a lot to look at, and we have to be very careful what we do.
Any more questions on that slide?
Was there a question there,
Mr. Carpenter? Let's follow the thread through it so we get the train of thought on what we're doing here in this presentation. What we've talked about is that the problem is that there's a structural problem between what we spend and what we're earning. And there's choices. We could use a permanent fund or the Constitutional Budget Reserve or other sorts of money. But why not just the Constitutional Budget Reserve? And that's where we are right now on this slide. So go ahead.
Correct, Mr. Chairman. So as we see here, given the $2.1 billion currently remaining and just my modest 2% growth in general fund appropriations, we're out of money by 2009. Actually, we don't even quite meet 2009 at this Ow. People have been saying that for years.
Do you mean, just to bring that back to the introduction of this slide, do you mean that if we just use the constitutional budget reserve funds, that we're out of money by 2009 based on the assumptions you've discussed to date?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. And general fund revenue projections as they are, if we maintain $43 a barrel.
Okay, again, this is not looking at any earnings reserve of the permanent fund. That's independent of this slide, your analysis in this slide. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Representative Seaton?
Yeah. Did you say this was based on $43 a barrel oil?
Or? Oh, no. I'm sorry. Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, this is based on actual revenue projections by the Department of Revenue. So, and
at $22 a barrel or 28?
The first few years, it's FY06 is $34.50, 2007 is $30.95, 2008 is $25.50, and actually, I'm sorry, that is the current long-term price they're showing, $25.50.
Okay. Representative C.
No, I just...
I mean, Representative Samuels?
No, I was just... Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to point out that it's $25.50 is the long-term.
$25.50 is the long-term forecast for oil, just for chart preparation purposes. I just had a question. Maybe Representative Seaton can explain this. The gas pipeline shows this F of X sort of change in XY chart. I'm not sure how it works, but you develop a gas line, you build it, and then you turn the pipe on. Do revenues really climb like that, or is it a sort of more of immediate sort of thing? I don't know how that's been discussed in terms of analysis under the Stranded Gas Act, or somebody else can discuss that.
Mr. Chairman, I'll look into it. I'm thinking it. Number one, it takes a whole lot of gas to fill a pipeline. If you build a pipeline down the highway, or even if you did something within the state, but it's going to take $100 million worth of gas to fill the pipeline itself, and it takes some time to get it there. But I would think you turn it on and you've got 4.5 feet. It might be expansions that they're looking at, but I can't see also where's the money coming from in 2011, even a little bit, on the graph itself. I see that as probably a bit problematic.
You mean the gas pipeline money?
The gas pipeline money that they're showing in 2011.
Okay, Representative Roper.
Mr. Chairman, I think my best guess on this, the sloping curve, would be a result of the provisions of the Stranded Gas Act and what we would be voting on, assuming there would be some startup front-loaded concessions there to incent the development.
Well, that seems reasonable.
Because we understand that, I mean, there would be two. When they turn on the pipe, there's going to be a pretty big dump. That could be also reflect the decrease in North American prices. See, I don't know.
I think that any further comments or questions? I just think that what the public needs to understand, and what I appreciate in this slide, is that if we don't do something and we just use CBR, we're still out of money. It still goes away. I know. Every time, every year, and Representative Roekberg or Gruenberg is probably in a better position to assess this, and that is every year that line moves out on the constitutional budget reserve simply because our bacon's been saved by oil taxes or something else. I mean, because the projections on the complete drawdown of zero of the constitutional budget reserve has always been based on some sort of static scenario.
I thought it came from OMB.
Representative Seat.
Yeah, just one other thing, because we did have a change. Do these graphs incorporate general fund revenue from the administrative order on ELF on Prudhoe Bay?
No, sir, they do not.
So then there's another $150 billion a year in general fund revenues that we have to add in on top of this. Is that at current prices?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, you could say that, yes, for 06. I had that same question the other day to a Department of Revenue economist, and she was saying that at least for 05, the drop in the average price offset that increase of $50 million they were projecting, so it was kind of
net zero, but could say for 06, yes.
Just for the, just for planning purposes, what we're going to do is adjourn at 9:45. That's yet to, that's all an unknown. I mean, what the effect of ELF does, or the administrative change in ELF from production and all that, that's all, we're all in a rhetorical phase, frankly, so we don't know what that is. All right, go ahead, Mr. Carpenter.
This slide depicts what would happen if you were to draw 50% from the ERA in addition to filling this, the fiscal gap with 50% from the ERA and 50% from the CBR. basically extending the life of the CBR and filling the fiscal gap completely, theoretically, at these assumptions. So it leads to the question of can you access the ERA to do what you're proposing here, and a simple majority vote is all that's required and has always been all that was required. This slide here is a snapshot of a monthly financial statement the Permanent Fund Corporation provides.
Sure.
Representative Groomberg.
Could we please go back to slide 11? Look at the last line. Maybe my arithmetic's wrong, but wouldn't it be 21 to 19?
21 in the House, 11 in the Senate.
Oh, I see.
It's hard to really get a close-up on this slide, but it's packed with lots of useful numbers. Like I was saying, it's on the Permanent Fund Corporation's website. They put it out monthly, updating their projections on earnings, realized and unrealized, and where the fund balance will be. They're projecting for 05 and forward, and what actually has occurred in the past.
Representative Roethlisberger.
Mr. Chairman, I unfortunately had a conflict yesterday, but I missed the Callan Associates presentation. I have a videotape. I'm looking forward to watching this weekend. But did they indicate any revision in the projected returns in the discussions yesterday?
Not that I recall. That what they're essentially they were reiterating what they had said in the past is pretty much borne out for the present, and they're holding to it for the future. So.
So they I didn't predict another decline, did they?
No, no.
The slide's fairly hard to believe, I would say, I guess. This is a grid showing if you were to pull with a fiscal gap on the left column of
X. Now, do you say that in that? Let me make sure I have the context of your statement. This is hard to believe, but it's true, or this is hard to believe, and I don't believe it, but I'm showing it to you anyway.
Mr. Chairman, this is hard to believe, but based on projections on returns and the way the current statute is written, this would be the effect on a dividend check.
It's true.
Yes.
Okay. Or it's as true as you all, we are, is anything else that happens in this place? Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, so the far left column depicts a fiscal gap in any particular year, $1 billion, $200 million is the range. The next column is if you were to fill half of it with the ERA. So let's take the highlighted green row showing a $500 million fiscal gap, $250 million draw each year from the earnings reserve account. What would be the effect on your dividend check in
depending on the year you enacted it, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years out. So by year five, if you were to say FY06, $250 million draw to balance the budget, by year five, the change in your check would be $30.
Representative Wilson.
Does this take into account that the permanent fund itself is going to be growing during that time?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, that is correct. This is built off their projections for earnings.
Representative Samuels.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is assuming the same methodology that we have now, no POMB.
That's correct.
Change.
Current statute for the dividend calculation.
Representative Wilson.
Is it possible to get a very similar chart that would show us what would be if we changed to a POMB, the 5% rate?
You have to give them other assumptions. POMB standalone does nothing. Okay. Only if you put the allocations attached to it does it give any integers. So.
Yeah. As if we didn't do anything, just like we're not doing anything now.
Right. I mean, POMB is a management tool. It doesn't allocate.
Yeah.
That's an additional action. So you have to make the assumptions.
Anything, Representative Seaton?
Yeah, it would be interesting to see the same chart with projected dividend amounts as well as just the influence on the dividend, because the dividends would be, under this scenario, I believe the dividends are going to be growing. And so it may be $30, but it's not $30 less than you get this year. It's $30 difference from the projected dividend at that time, which is a growing amount. So I think that would make a good presentation.
That's a good point, because, I mean, if you look at $30 off, $900 and $919, which was this year and anticipated, or last year and anticipated to be this year's, that may be one thing, but if it's 1,340, then it's, yeah. I think we all understand that. I was putting it in different terms. Representative Rookberg.
Always the assumption about how many, but I mean, it's already in the other column. You can see the projected dividend amount here. You just have to divide it by the your estimate of recipients is.
At least I know it's there.
I know, right. And I'm older than you.
Yeah. Anyone? Anyone else?
Speak of the devil. This chart shows if you were pulling $250 million each year, the status quo, what we projected right now with no draw, and the dividend check with a $250 million draw. So FY15, you're looking at $110 million approximately less per person or per check. That's $250 million each year.
This is shaping up to be a political will issue, not a money issue.
Always has been.
I just want, I think this is very important for the public to see what this means. Any questions on that? Okay, Mr. Carpenter.
This last slide depicts the declining balance of the CBR. If it was the yellow line being no sharing to fill a fiscal gap and the red line being a 50-50 split. The bars being the purple or maroon being the declining general fund revenue with the increasing general fund budget.
Representative
Roper. Might be interesting to see some of these graphs if there was no CBR draw and just earnings reserve.
One point I wanted to kind of make was I was thinking about this, that $250 million is one quarter of 1/30th of the earnings power of the permanent fund. So 25% of 3%, if you were to pull it. So we're talking billions. That's, I mean, if you think about that and the five-year averaging change in the dividend, it's kind of, it is reasonable too. It doesn't seem like a lot, but when you're dealing with the magnitude of money.
Question, Representative Roper.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's interesting to see this because notwithstanding the lowering impact on the CBR, it still fundamentally exhausts itself by FY12, you know, all things being equal. So you make an interesting case. I mean, what you need to consider why we should maintain a reserve or budget reserve, and then what amount that should be, and then its relationship to GF spending, and then how we allocate or utilize resources. So even by taking this different suggested approach in this legislation, it still doesn't solve the long-range problem. And it actually takes away a cash management and shock absorber tool, as we've discussed historically, from the legislature. So
we're going to have to go into that more.
Right.
I'd like to explore that more.
Right.
Representative Samuels.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of comments on the whole presentation. I think Representative Wilson hit it on the head when you start talking about whatever we do to fix this problem having the least impact on the economy. And if you cut the budget, if you cut the whole billion you eventually need out of the budget, that money for the most part gets spent here. So it's going to have an impact on the economy. And if you, as much as people say, if you have a sales tax, it's going to come from the tourist, or an income tax is going to come from the out-of-state workers. The reality is broad-based taxes, they're going to get paid by Alaskans. And that money then comes out of the economy. And if you strip away the politics, which is why POMV made so much sense last year, it's new money. You're not hurting the economy drastically. And the problem with just waiting for the earnings, which is, you know, I understand the political realities, but if you do that and you don't make your 7%, or if the market completely tanks and there are no earnings, then there we are. And that's what POMV, the whole point of it, was to stabilize the cash flow and have as little impact on the economy as possible. And that's why I said, if you strip away the politics, it is the shame on us if we don't fix the problem somehow. And the second thing that has not come up in this or anything else is the impact of the federal dollars on our economy. And it could all come together at one time. You know, our senior senator was the chairman of the Appropriations Committee, and he's going to lose a little bit of influence as the chairman of the Commerce Committee, and he's still a very influential man. Don Young will lose the chairmanship of the Transportation Committee eventually, and you never can tell when political parties switch, and the federal influence will continue to drop, and that's going to have an impact on our economy.
The oil in Iraq is at 3 to 5 million barrels a day.
It's production's going down, so there's a lot of things. If you could just strip away the politics out of here, the problem is certainly fixable. So I commend you, Mr. Chairman, for bringing it forward again.
Well, we're going to keep hitting the hammer. Representative Grunberg, quickly.
Just one other factor, too. These federal programs, they just seem to bring in money until you can get the program going, and then the money stops.
Representative Zeke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to let everybody know that the State Affairs Committee is having a subcommittee that's working on PERS and TERS on Saturday, 10 to 12, and everyone's invited, public as well. It'll be teleconference if people are back home. And it's another big issue that we're digging. We've got a hole. So
we're adjourned.
I'm about ready.